So, declutter. I am kind of excited about talking about this subject because this whole thing about organization in our classrooms and decluttering is something that I've always been looking on for ways to improve in my own classroom. In fact, I've tended to be a bit obsessive about it at times, and that's not always a healthy thing. And also, kind of ironically, when I was putting this talk together, I found that it was very difficult to arrange it in an uncluttered sort of way. So there's that. Hopefully I've done a reasonable job of presenting this in an understandable way. First here, I want to ask the question, why declutter and organize in the first place? And for some of us, we find that it is rejuvenating for us to have everything neat and tidy, and we just find that sense of peace around that. Not everyone is geared that way. I find it that way. It can provide a better learning environment for students. There's research done on this type of thing, and it's clear about that. And it gives your classroom a professional atmosphere, which pushes students to strive for excellence, which is something that we're interested in doing as teachers. And, perhaps most importantly, it helps you as a teacher avoid mistakes and miss fewer important things. What should you declutter? Well, it would be hard to cover everything. I've chosen five things that we're going to focus on in this workshop that especially need our attention with decluttering, but we could have 99 things to cover, but we'll go with five today. The first one is perhaps the most obvious, and that is your desk. I've taught for 5 years now, and I still find that my desk can quickly become this mound of papers and sticky notes and pens and eraser bits, or at least crumbs and candy wrappers and who knows what all is on my desk, cups and mugs. And when my desk starts getting piled full of all of this clutter, there's a number of negative things that happen. One is that I start losing focus about what's important for me to work on, because there's all these little tasks for me to work on. And I lose efficiency when I'm trying to find something that is important or that a student needs, and I can't find it, and it's right under my nose, I know it. And there's no room maybe for a student to come up to my desk, which is kind of embarrassing for a teacher to have that happen. So the next thing we'll be talking about is your classroom. Decluttering your classroom as a whole. Now, your desk is a part of your classroom, obviously, but it's kind of its own animal, so I kept it separate. But your classroom, as the day progresses, it kind of disintegrates and begins looking like a landfill sometimes, and there's books on tables, and chairs are out of order and out of place, and grade books maybe have been left out, and the grade pens, and the plants are wilting, and the windows are actually messy, and there's maybe this overly successful science experiment to clean up. And so as your classroom begins descending into what I would call clutter chaos, there's some negative things that begin to happen there. One is that we as teachers, we start getting sloppy with our work because everything is already sloppy. And students start picking up on this and feeling the same way about their work. And there's kind of this general sense of losing control. And that's a really uncomfortable way to feel as a teacher, especially if you're a teacher that's supposed to know what he's doing. And I still face that sometimes. We'll talk about decluttering your mind. They're full of mental clutter. And if they are full of mental clutter, it doesn't matter how uncluttered your classroom environment is, you're not going to be very efficient. There's a lot on a teacher's mind at school, as well as often things outside of school that are going on. Your schedule is another area that we'll talk about. It can often be maybe overlooked in this area of decluttering. I've tweaked my personal and classroom schedule from time to time, but it wasn't until this past year that I really started focusing on decluttering my schedule specifically, and it was really amazing, the results. And so that's something that I want to spend some time talking about. And then finally, we're going to talk about decluttering your stress. Maybe you can't declutter your stress, but we'll spend some time talking about stress at least, because let's be honest, the life of a teacher does have its stressful points, just like any job, but in some special ways perhaps as teachers. And so we're going to explore just a few ways that we can declutter and maybe manage our stress to avoid burnout and cultivate health and happiness in our teaching careers. I want to spend just a little time, and I'm moving through this quickly because 45 minutes is barely going to cut us here, so bear with me. But one thing I want to say here is what decluttering is not, and that is decluttering and minimalism are not the same thing. And this is something I didn't realize for years. I believe that true decluttering was the same as absolute minimalism. And so I would get unhappy with how unminimal, if that's a word, things would become in my classroom. And one example of this would be my desk. I thought that a desk with essentially nothing on it except a pen and a notepad, that was decluttered. But that's actually not true, because what had happened, in essence, it was just minimalist. And I had not really improved things for myself. My desk itself was decluttered, but my life wasn't. I just pushed everything aside in different places, out of reach often, and so I'd become actually less efficient by pursuing minimalism. Okay, so that's a little pitfall that I fell into, and I would just suggest avoiding the pitfall of minimalism and separating it from decluttering, which is what we're talking about. So far we've talked about why it's important to declutter. We talked about the five areas that we're going to look at specifically, and then the important difference between decluttering and minimalism. So first up here, declutter the desk. And this is a picture of my desk in a somewhat cluttered stage, though it has been worse. One thing I want to say about some of the pictures I'm sharing here, we had to leave in kind of an emergency circumstances to head out to Idaho. There was a death in the family. And so I was unable to get some of the pictures that I would have gotten if I would have had that extra week to get those. So some of these are kind of outdated, but I did the best with what I had from the past. So declutter your desk. Just remember, your desk is not an advertisement for, say, a Mac computer. They like to be minimalist, right? Rather, your desk is essentially a workbench. And just when I kind of began understanding that concept, that was really life-changing for me to identify it as that. And the thing with a workbench is, if tools keep showing up on a workbench, most people advise that you find a place right on your workbench or your desk for that tool to stay, whether it's on top or in a drawer close by. Just in a very practical sort of way with your desk, it's a good habit to organize your desk at the beginning of the year, or at least once a year. I think the beginning of the year is a practical place to do that. It's a good way to start gearing up for the next school year. That way you know what's in your desk and that everything's arranged. But that's just kind of a practical idea for you. Here's a bigger picture of my desk. One thing I want you to notice here that I found helpful is the shelf that is on my desk. It's something I added several years ago. And it's a shelf where students pass in their books, where I can grab them without getting up from my desk. And in my room, I grade almost all my students' math. And so the procedure is that they pass in their math books open, and I take them when I'm ready, and I grade them, and then I put them on a stack on the right-hand side there, and I call that student's name, and that way they know their math is ready to pick back up because I'm done grading it. But the idea here is that I have a place where students are handing in work that I can easily grab and process right from my workbench and get sent back out to them. I also have several organizers at my desk, and you can kind of see this one. There's one kind of behind my computer there. And these organizers I found really helpful, and of course you can use different kinds, but these in particular I really like. The one on the left hand there is, I find, really helpful for organizing tests and quizzes. The lower part of it I use for outgoing tests and quizzes for the week or for the day. And the top tray is where students pass in their tests and quizzes that they've taken for the day. And so it's kind of acting as an inbox there. And I try to sort through that inbox a couple of times a day to try to keep things organized there. Another useful tool, if you will, for your desk is a bookshelf, either beside or on or behind your desk. And this is just a great place for you to put all those things that you don't have room for on your desk at a convenient location. In my case, I can spin around in my chair and access everything on my desk, which my school board kindly had built for me to my specs, so that was a perk. My desktop itself can become a mess, like I mentioned, of papers. One of the things that has helped me, a couple of things. One is if you use a computer, which I do a lot, I've moved to more documents right on my computer that I keep really handy throughout the day, and that cuts a lot of paper for you if that's something that's convenient. But the most important thing that has really helped me is moving to a single piece of notebook paper for my notes about the day. And when I say notebook paper, that can be electronic or it can be a physical piece of notebook paper. I used to use sticky notes, and they would get lost. And I could never find, or I'd miss until after the students had left, I'd miss the note about that I needed to say to the students before they went home, and it was a mess. And just simply moving to one place for all my notes and all the tasks that I needed to do or tell my students during the school day or things that came up, everything is in one piece of paper, whether that's electronic or physical, and that was game-changing for me. Here's an example. I don't know if you'll be able to see it very well. The left-hand side is what I used to use, just an example of a notebook paper that I would put notes on. It had reminders at the bottom and some to-dos during the day. And then on the right-hand side is actually kind of my current one that I use. It's a today document that I just update each morning. And it's always a good idea to organize your desktop on a daily basis as well, whether that's in the morning or in the evening before you go home from school. I've done both. But having it reset at least once a day. One thing I just want to say here, I think this concept right here is really important for this whole idea of decluttering, is that decluttering isn't just a one-time task. It's a lifestyle that we have to cultivate and grow in. So if you don't remember anything else about this talk, if you can kind of remember that, it would be helpful. Next up, declutter your classroom. Michael Linson, in his book, The Happy Teacher Habits, he says this: for the most part, the more immaculate the classroom, the more effective the teacher is. Now, I don't agree with everything that Michael Linson has to say about classroom clutter, but you should read his book and decide for yourself. It's an excellent book. But I think the general principle is true that a classroom should have an orderly appearance. I would call it the library look. Here's a picture of one corner of my classroom. I have to say, the school I teach in gave me a really nice, large classroom that I can do some stuff like this in, and not everyone gets that opportunity. But I like to hang on to books, even ones that I don't use, which is something Michael Linson, I think, would say, tear all the books that you don't use. Because I like how books look on a bookshelf, even if they don't get used. I put lots of plants in my classroom. I finally figured out how to keep them alive. It took me several years. You just water them once a week. Okay, that's all it is. Hang a few paintings on the wall. That's something I like to do. And basically, I'm trying for kind of a comfortable, inviting appearance. I actually don't maintain a bulletin board. I'm curious, is anybody else not maintain a bulletin board? Okay, good for you. Best decluttering tip ever. I have a I know, isn't that terrible? I tried for 1 year and gave up. I have a little quote board, one of these little letter boards that my wife actually updates once a quarter for me, and that's it as far as that goes. But as a general rule, in your classroom, you want to remove anything that doesn't serve a purpose, okay? And if its purpose is presentation, like decor, that's purpose, then that's okay. As long as your kind of aim is to keep things neat and orderly and not overdone, and maybe having someone kind of come behind you and give suggestions, like your wife, would be appropriate there. I think for the older grades especially, the word professional would be appropriate when you're thinking about how to set up your classroom. For younger grades, you might think of other words to fit. But no matter how neat and tidy your classroom may appear, by the end of the day, it can fall into disarray. And this has been a big frustration of mine. But over the years, I found a few ways to kind of keep up with this or make this frustration go away. And the biggest asset here, actually, is having your students help. Having your students help with maintaining order, that's one of your biggest assets. Putting them to work daily and not just weekly at those weekly cleanings, that's really important. You can have your students clean out their desks periodically because their desk can get as messy as yours. In fact, at the end of each day, I just make kind of as a closing comment, as a closing procedure, one of the things that I tell my students is make sure your desks are orderly and that your loose papers are put away in the loose paper folder that I give them at the beginning of the year. That's just a little pocket folder that I provide at the beginning of the year where all their loose papers need to be. And just getting rid of all those loose papers and having them in one place usually unclutters a student's desk significantly. Occasionally we do kind of a flash cleaning where I demand that everything comes out of their desk, whether it's neat or not. Everything comes out on the floor and then they can put it back in. And it's kind of chaotic and wild, but it kind of resets their desks for a while. We've all heard about classroom procedures, the importance of those, passing in papers, passing in notebooks, books, quizzes, etc. And all those things are true. In my classroom, I teach two science classes usually, and something that I found helpful with staying organized with all the papers associated with that is actually having two organizer trays, one for each class, and then students pass all their papers for that class into that appropriate organizer. And that can help me stay a little more organized with all of that paperwork. On the shelf there at my desk, I have labeled spots for all the books that are coming in, so the different maths each have their own particular place there to land, plus anything else that I want to land right on my desk shelf. And then I have a bookcase close to my desk that students also stack work that they're handing in, and that's also labeled with different things just to keep things from getting jumbled up is the idea there. You can have some cleanup procedures at the end of the day a couple of different ways. One of the most helpful that I figured out was to ask the classroom as a whole to all work together to get all the chairs put back, all the grade books back, all the pens back, and this also goes into the room. We have a room next to us that we use as a study hall. They arrange the chairs over there, and everything is put back perfectly into order before they sit down for closing announcements. And they want to get this done fast because they're ready to get out the door for the day, and I won't let them get out the door for the day until that's done. So they work quickly and get a lot done. Another thing that I found helpful is to assign about three students that for the entire week after they are dismissed, they go out and they pick up trash in the gym, they clean up the bathroom just on their way out the door. And that can be helpful with kind of general gym maintenance, which our trustees are kind of worried about sometimes. Just some other organizational things. At the end of each day, I look through my students' work and I actually check it off and most of the time. Sometimes I'm pretty thorough, other times I just take a quick glance. And then I have this big stack of books that are supposed to get passed back. And in my first year of teaching, I went and passed all these books back on the appropriate desk. And then I got smart and I figured out that students do a great job of passing books back. And so I just, if I have books left over at the end of the day that haven't gotten back to students, I just go set them on the grading table that's right near the end of the door where they come in. And they know it's procedure when they come in the door the next morning, there's a stack of books, they know they have to grab it and pass it out. and that I don't have to pass out a thing. And they actually enjoy it. In fact, during the day, if I have time to check some work and I have stacks ready to go back, they're just about fighting over each other to get up there and pass out the books. Here's this next one isn't really necessary. You can see I kind of go overboard sometimes. Not that one. Color coding your binders. I kind of did this for a visual. My grade books go into binders, and I color coded them according to CLE's color coding scheme, basically. So orange is social studies, and maroon is Bible, and green is math, and blue is language arts. And if you shop on staples.com, you can, or even the Staples store, you can. They have a nice selection of different colored 3D binders. So that's just an idea of maybe something you could explore. Oh yes, install a projector. Okay, so another area that in our classrooms can get really cluttered sometimes is the whiteboard. And the whiteboard, I have a really nice whiteboard now. It's one of the ceramic steel ones. It's really, really nice. But it still gets marked up quickly. And one of the things that has kind of uncluttered some things for me is this thing of a projector, which can be useful in a wide range of applications, from throwing maps up on the screen to anything else. If you have an iPad, an Apple Pencil, those expensive options, you can actually screencast to a projector, maybe through an Apple TV box, which is just a screencasting box, essentially. That's what I use. And then what that allows me to do, and I use this for algebra a lot, is it allows me to set up math classes ahead of time. Math classes usually is what I use this for. So I do all my different math classes ahead of time on my iPad, and then in the morning when I'm teaching those math classes, I can just jump from one to the next without any pause. Everything just pops right up on the screen. I'm ready to go for the next class. I don't have to spend a lot of time setting up the next class. So that's helpful for me. It also makes the whiteboard a breeze to clean. And so I like that. But, okay, so a projector is an expensive option. So here, you kind of have to lean either on your own pocket, or you go to your parents in your classroom and say, hey, I would love to install a projector. Would there be any donations towards that? And in my case, I had plenty of donations to cover the cost there. And that maybe is one of the perks of being a longtime teacher, is you can ask for some things like that. So just a little plug there. Marking the floor for desk arrangements. I put little pieces of tape on the carpet so I know how to keep my desk arranged after the weekly cleaning. When we vacuum, everything can go back into straight lines really quickly. That's helpful. And tidy files from CLE, these things, they're actually kind of expensive for being cardboard, but they're great for organizing your light unit inventory, some things like that. Some teachers use these for student organization at their desk, I think. I've not tried that, but that's an option on the CLE website if that's something helpful. All right, decluttering your mind. You know, a teacher's mind is a little bit like their dad's garage. It's full of valuable tools and half-finished projects. And no one knows quite where anything is. And the same is true for a teacher. There's a lot of tasks and responsibilities that are on our minds, and it can be kind of overwhelming. And so I'm going to spend some time thinking about some practical ways that we can declutter our minds. And these are just practical and general in some ways. And I want to say here, some of these you'd actually need to do a little bit of your own homework on to really make effective for yourself. But for the most part, they're intuitive and practical, I think. The first one is learning to use a notebook or a task reminders app, or a combination of the two. Is so helpful to simply write down a task in a place where you know you're going to find it, and then you don't have to worry about trying to keep that in your mind. I use an app called TickTick, not TikTok, TickTick, okay? And it does a great job with extensive task tracking, even project tracking across a couple of devices that I use. But I still use Apple's Simple Reminders app, or you could use Android's Simple Reminders app just for a a simple reminder that will pop up at a specific time. Using the timer, whether that's on your phone or watch or even just a kitchen timer. In fact, I would just refer to this as a kitchen timer approach. I forget things quickly when I'm occupied with other things. And so I found it helpful to simply set a timer on my watch for 30 minutes to remind me of maybe the spelling quiz that I need to take after that time. And when it buzzes my wrist, then I know it's time to do the spelling quiz. Setting alarms on your phone for all the recesses so that you don't go past time. Students will remind you. And you can set your phone to just vibrate instead of ring loudly. So that way you're getting reminders without your students having any idea that that an alarm is going off. And I find that helpful. Even setting a simple kitchen timer with a group of students outside to study, set for maybe 10 minutes or however much time they're allowed to study, that keeps them accountable for that amount of time, and then they come back to their classroom without you having to go out and find them or send somebody out to find them. And guess what? If they abuse that, next time they don't get that privilege. So it really does keep them accountable and works really well. So I have like 6 kitchen timers that I keep handy to send out if I need to do that. Okay, learn and apply at least the basics of David Allen's well-known getting things done method. I'm curious how many of you have heard of this, getting things done. Okay, so you need to look it up. He has a book. It's geared towards kind of businessmen, okay? But you can just look it up online if you want to dig into it some more. So this is one that you need to do some homework on. But the basics of this is just, it's a simple time management discipline is what I would call it. And the most basic concept here is that you keep an inbox, whether that's on of all the tasks that you need to do, whether they're small or large. So that could be an inbox on notebook or on an app somewhere, however you like to do that. And you go through that inbox fairly regularly. And when you see a new task, when you're sorting through it and you come across a task that only takes a couple of minutes to complete, then that day you take care of taking care of that two-minute task and you get it done. If it's a task that takes a couple of hours or an hour to complete, then you schedule that for a particular day and time that you're going to take care of that task. That's the getting things done method in kind of a simple form. And it's important to note with any getting things done method, it is not making less work for you. It simply is providing you with a framework for which to process work in a really efficient way. Okay? So that's where it can be helpful. The other one here is the discipline. Are you ready? The discipline of deep work. Now, how many of you know have read deep work? I'm curious. Okay? So you got your homework for you. Deep work. Okay? So don't get scared here. This was a term coined by a man named Cal Newport. He has a book by the same name. Again, kind of geared towards businessmen, all right? But the term deep work just describes the ability to, or discipline perhaps you'd say, to focus deeply without any interruptions on a single particular task for a relatively short amount of time and really getting a lot done. And if you are a long-term teacher, I can almost guarantee that you already do deep work. You know what that feels like, to get a lot done in an extremely focused sort of way because you had to, right? Okay? So you know what deep work feels like. It was helpful for me to read this book and realize, you know what, this is actually a discipline. And I can actually put this into effect in my day. And so when I come into the classroom in the morning, my idea is, this is my time to do deep work. I'm going to cut all the distractions. I'm going to focus on preparing for these particular classes. I'm going to get a lot done in a short amount of time. And I personally, I find that approaching it with that sort of discipline very helpful. Kind of going hand in hand with this, and perhaps more practically for you if you haven't read that book, is cutting notifications. We all know how distracting notifications on our phones can be, text messages, WhatsApp messages, even Facebook, or whatever. And I personally, I find it extremely challenging to stay focused if those notifications are coming in. And the most helpful thing you can do here is just turn off all the notifications on your phone, whether that's airplane mode or be more specific. And I've turned off all the notifications from most things on my device except for phone calls and text messages. I think that's about it. That's all the notifications I get. Avoid responding to WhatsApp messages or emails until sometime after lunch. That's just a really practical discipline that you can have. And so I make it clear to my wife, she knows this, and the parents of my students, that if they need me to act on something, they need to call me, and then I will take time and act on it. Otherwise, it's going to wait towards later in the day, most times. And that doesn't necessarily avoid all the distractions that kind of wreak havoc on our day. Something will always blow up at some point in your school year and create havoc of your day. Okay, but it does help at least be more consistent about getting things done. Keeping an ideas list. This was something that I started a few years ago that's been really helpful for me. This ideas list is just a document of ideas for things that I would like to do differently or like to try next year, often in response to a problem that I perceive I'm facing this year. And doing that helps me in several different ways. One is I'm encouraged that I'm learning from the mistakes that I made today and I'm finding solutions for those. I'm also encouraged that when I run the next time I teach next year, that particular problem won't be so much a problem because I've at least made a few steps to make that problem go away, even if it's perfect. Okay? And it also helps me stay teaching because I'm always investing in that next year out there. And that really helps. If you're interested in being a long-term teacher, I think you should try this. This was a game changer for me, using an electronic grade book. I use an online one, but I say electronic here because Excel, there's some Excel programs out here that work well. But I use one called ThinkWave. It's free. I will say that if you use the free version, you will want to use a good ad blocker on your browser because it'll pop up ads. But this is just kind of a home screen where a lot of grade entries go on. And an electronic grade book takes some time to set up, like any grade book, really. It takes some time to set up. But once it's set up, you can kind of copy a lot of things from year to year, and you can easily go back to previous years and see things. Here's the great part about an electronic grade book, and that is report cards. I just print my report cards off. They're all figured up for me, except for the conduct part. That's another side to report cards, right? But you notice this one's accurate to the nearest hundredth of a percentage point, which is kind of fun for me to look at and see how things are going to that level of accuracy. And again, it takes some time to set up, but I found that helpful. And so if you have, if it's an option for you, I definitely encourage you to look into that. And I know for some people it's not a good option, and that's fine. An electronic lesson planner is another tool that I found really helpful. I used a paper planner for 2 years, and I got sick and tired of it because I would never lay out my plans very far in the future because I knew there was going to be that snow day that would wreck everything that I had ahead of that, and then I'd have to change everything. It was always a headache because I never knew quite where things were going to end up at the end of the year. Was I going to finish the subject on time, or was I going to finish like 6 weeks ahead of time? And with an electronic or an online lesson planner, it takes care of all that mess for you. And you can bump a lesson forwards, you can extend a lesson, you can throw in a snow day and it throws everything forwards, and you can see exactly where every subject is coming out at the end of the year. So there's a couple of good options here. One is planbook.com. Anybody use this? Okay, again, I'm alone on this. Planbook.com I've used for several years now. It's a really good one. It's a bit clunky and slow. It's very powerful, but it's a little outdated. I wish they would do some updating. I'd stick with it, but I'm planning to try Chalk.com's plan board this year. Anybody use that? Okay. This one's a really, I think, going to be a good one. It's more updated. I don't like the layout as well in some ways, but I'm going to give it a try a year. See, I like it. Okay. Planning a detailed weekly schedule. This is one place where I've figured out it pays to put in the time. Even though I have an online lesson planner that tells me exactly what I should do each week, right? I find it helpful to meticulously take those plans and lay them out in what I call a weekly schedule print-off that I give to each of my students. And here's a picture of one. So this is an entire one. That one's cropped a little bit so you can see it a little closer. So this has the assignments for the entire classroom on it for every subject for each day of the week, and I print it off and give it to the students at the beginning of the week. It also has notes at the bottom about different things that are happening, like Bible memory and someone who's coming in for devotions and who has the daily cleaning, some stuff like that. I have the days of the month at the top and the week and the quarter, and all that information is all there. And it does take time to put together. It's a real headache in a lot of ways. And I've been tempted at times to kind of do away with it. But the benefit that I've found with something like this is that it, as someone put it, it's the friction that forces me to slow down and reflect on every assignment for every grade. And then I see it in this kind of a big snapshot picture for the entire week, for the entire classroom, and without fail, I begin realizing that, oh, I did not assign enough for that particular grade, or I assigned too much and I need to back off because we have this thing happening this afternoon that I hadn't originally planned for. And so this discipline, if I can use that word, it allows me to kind of strategize and shape each week in kind of a dynamic way for my specific classroom for that specific week, instead of just kind of haphazardly throwing out the next goals without regard to anything else. So I find that a really helpful tool, and in the handout that I'll hand out at the end of class, I'll have a little link to this particular one if you want to copy it. All right, next up is decluttering your schedule. This has been an area that has been challenging for me, my personal and classroom schedule both. There's been spots that have been frustrating to me, and I don't know how you find it, but students running out of things to do or not staying, not doing what they're supposed to do, and my schedule is often the root of that problem. And so my first suggestion here is that if there's a spot of your day that's not flowing smoothly, spend some time fiddling around with your schedule, if that's a possibility for you, and try to come up with some solutions that might streamline that clutter in your schedule that's causing a problem. And sometimes you have to think outside of the box. So I'm going to go over some things that I found helpful from my classroom. And I just want to stress with all of this, this is things that work in my classroom. They may not work very well in yours. But one thing that I do in my classroom now is I have my lunch recess before we actually eat lunch. And what that does for me is that everyone goes out to the playground at exactly the same time. And so the game can get started right away instead of this thing of students slowly trickling out and milling around. And finally, with 5 minutes left to play, they get started and then they're like, what, it's over already? And so that does away with that. And then we all come in at a designated time. We all come in together and we eat our lunch around a big table and work on communication skills and conversation skills, because I think that's important, and they kind of hate it. But and they're forced to stay there until it's time to go back in and get back into classes. So that's something I've done that I like. If they're hungry before recess, I just tell them, you know what, bring a candy bar next time or a snack to eat on the playground to keep you going. Another thing I've done, I had a terrible time with students coming in from third recess, and we had a class period after that third recess, and it was such a chore to get them all focused again. It would take 10 or 15 minutes to get everyone kind of calmed down and back in their work. And I was so frustrated with that. And so finally, I moved my third recess to the last period of the day. And there was some things I didn't like about doing that, but I do like doing it overall. The thing of them coming back in from that last recess, and I don't have to fight with them to get them to refocus for another class period. They know that they're just done for the day. They love it. They love it. And so it's worth the trade-offs. Here's another thing that's been really effective for me, and I kind of learned this accidentally, I guess, and that is identifying what you will work on in your spare time during each class period. And what I mean by this is kind of at the beginning of the year maybe, sitting down and thinking, what are the things that I should work on during each class period this year that are kind of daily things that need to be taken care of? And this simple process relieves so much mental clutter for a teacher. So an example, I know that after my math classes are taught first period, when I sit down at my desk, everybody's working quietly, hopefully, I know that the first thing I'm going to do is review the language classes that I'm going to be teaching the next period. That is just what I do. And then after that, I choose a writing prompt for later in the day. And then, if I still have time, to often do, if math is coming in, I start grading that. Okay. And during the second period, maybe math is still coming in, I'm grading some of that. But I'm prepping my science class, which happens in the afternoon, or my music class that happens in the afternoon. I kind of do one or the other usually. And just knowing what is important for me to work on without having to make any real decision about it is really helpful for me. Then items that need attention on maybe a weekly or a quarterly, a yearly basis, those are the things that I then work on after lunch, but I don't have to be prepping for other classes if I have spare time. Otherwise, it goes till after school. So things like report cards, for example. And then sometime after lunch, I try to sit down and identify what must get done before students leave school that would allow me to go home in good time today. Just kind of think through that a bit. All right, a next one here. Organize your desk by the end of the school day. And I would almost say this is the number one thing that has changed my life as a teacher. And this is a suggestion from my wife, a very seemingly simple suggestion, a little along the lines of maybe the book by that Navy admiral called Make Your Bed. Anybody familiar with that? Okay, very simple concept here. My goal is to have my desk organized before students go home for the day. This includes sorting through the tests and quizzes that have come in and getting the grade books all ready for those. And what this does for me is it allows me to stay on task immediately after school. As soon as the students are out the door, I'm on task. Otherwise, I want to drink that cup of coffee, relax, breathe a sigh of relief, and then start organizing everything. And then I'm like, oh, I have all that to do yet? And it's just discouraging, and I'm tired. But this way, I stay on task. My goal is to get to school as early as possible, usually 6:30, maybe 7, and then leave as early as possible as well. That's kind of the thing that motivates me throughout the day, and I'm fairly unashamed about that. Another thing that I found really helpful is to choose when I do my grading. I used to just grade whenever I had spare time. And then one morning I woke up and I realized, you know what, I'm wasting those beautiful morning hours grading. I can grade in my sleep, practically. And I don't need to be, I need to be spending those fresh hours studying with and doing personal growth, spiritual growth, and studying for those classes. And then if I have extra time later in the day, then I will grade. And if I don't get it done, I take it home. And my wife helps me with it. And so, marry the right girl, guys. That might be the best decluttering tip for you. That's right. Choose a time to stop for the day. We'll hopefully we won't go over time here. We might just a couple of minutes. But choosing a time to stop for the day. All the self-help authors you'll ever read will mention this one. Your work is never done as a teacher. Get used to it. Have a cutoff time and go home. All right, declutter your stress. All right. We can't avoid all stress, but perhaps we can deal with it in some practical ways. And the first big thing here is kill the perfectionist inside of you. And when I say kill the perfectionist, I don't mean that you should give up your striving for excellence. Rather, I mean if you are never content unless things are perfect, if you're never able to move forward until things are perfect, if you can never rest until things are perfect, if you can never teach until things are perfect, then you're most certainly in for some burnout, no matter how much decluttering you do. The truth is, real life is messy and is rarely neat and orderly. So recognize that not all is going to be perfect and decluttered in your life, and your classroom is no exception to that. And be okay with that to some degree. There's a book by John Acuff called Finish that impacted me tremendously on this particular subject of perfectionism and what a problem that is for us as teachers and for students sometimes as well. All right, and then the next to last thing. Identify the things that cause you the most stress as a teacher. I found this helpful to think through things, oh, this is causing me a lot of stress, and then come up with some ways to make it less stressful, which you can do. So just a couple of ideas real briefly here. One is maybe if report cards are really stressful for you, take them to a coffee shop in a not really nice environment, if that's your thing, and do your report cards there. Use an online gradebook to make it easier. Spread your work out over a couple of weeks and kind of budget your time. Or reward yourself by buying yourself really nice after you get your report cards done, if that's what stresses you out. Maybe the stress is the relationship with a parent or a student, and that's a real one for us teachers, right? And so this gets into the whole area of interpersonal relationships, which could take up multiple workshops all of its own. But just some pointed advice here real quickly. Communicate with that person more, usually not less, is a good rule. And always clear the air by approaching that relationship with honesty, humility, and a willingness to listen. Perhaps your stress comes from the amount of things you feel you have to do. And here I want you to read a little bit about the 80-20 principle. There's some different names for it. But the 80-20 principle is this really interesting principle that states that 20% of the input will yield 80% of the results in any situation. And this, the studies have been made on this. This pops up in nature. It pops up in culture, in American cities, about population. For example, about 20% of the American cities contain about 80% of the population. I think I have that one right. About 20% let's see if I get this one here. 20% of the population earns about 80% of the money. Is another one. And this principle kind of is true all the time. And so the general principle here is that 20% of your hard work as a teacher will yield 80% of the results. So the idea here for you to think about is that you need to figure out what is the most important things for you to focus on in your classroom, what will really make a difference, and then be okay with letting some of those other things slide, like maybe checking your students' work every evening. Is it going to be a big problem if I miss it a day? No, it's not going to wreck the school year for me or for them just to hand it back without looking at it at all. Okay, conclusion here. Remember, it's okay to not be perfect. It's better to do a little decluttering than none at all. And it's okay to get things done, even when things are messy. Oops, wrong button.